it's going down, man. It's the Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We have a very special guest today. Anybody who's listened to the podcast, you heard myself and other guests on the show mention the importance of Southwest Wholesale and just the major role they played in the Houston hip-hop movement in the 90s and 2000s and everything like that. And today we are it's an honor to be joined by one of the founders of Southwest Wholesale, Robert Gilliman. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks.
Yeah. So what's going on, man? What's new?
Well, we're opening a distribution company again, Southwest Digital Distribution. We've only been going for a few months now. Haven't really launched yet, but that's what I'm doing now. I did restaurants for a while after Southwest. We did restaurants, and then I've been retired a couple of times. Now I'm back doing this.
Yeah.
So, where's the camera coming from?
It's right here. Yeah. So when you what was kind of the decision to get back to it? Was it just a love for it, or you just saw another opportunity?
Yeah. I keep talking to some of the guys, and I think we can help the market. Like we helped the market before, I think there's room for another distributor that kind of educates the guys off the streets, and I think I was always proud that that's kind of what we did at Southwest.
Okay.
Back in the day, so.
So are you guys going to be kind of like, I guess more of like an empire where they do, you know, they kind of do like 80-20 splits and things like that?
Just, well, I hope we get to that point.
Yeah.
We'll see. We're just gonna start out and see where it takes us.
Yeah. That's nice, man. That's nice. I've actually said, like, man, Southwest Wholesale could be a great help, like, today. You know what I mean? Because you guys have done so much, you know, for just for the scene in the past, man.
Well, we hope to be able to. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so take me back. I was doing some research on you guys, and I didn't know, but you guys started in 1976?
We started in 1976. Myself and a childhood friend, Richard Powers, he was the majority stockholder, and but it was just the two of us. We built the shelves in San Antonio, Texas. In 1980, we opened up in Houston. And I came over about 6 months after we opened and started. We were one stop at the time, which means we were buying from distributor. We were buying from Warner Brothers and Sony and Universal and selling it to the retail stores when there were a lot of retail stores in that day.
Like the mom and pops and things
mom
like
and
that.
Mom and pops, Musicland, Blockbuster. Sound Waves was the big one here.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. We started selling 45s and 8-tracks and albums and then cassettes and then just moved on from there. Finally CDs.
Yeah.
And now not even CDs.
Yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
It was a harder business back then because you had to take returns, and that was a real hard part of the business. Now, at least with the digital stuff, if they buy it, it's sold. So back in the old days, if you sold it to a retailer, you still had to worry that they were going to send it back to you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So do you think with the business model as it is today, with the streaming, that it would be a whole lot less risk as far as on the back end of, you know, maybe being stuck with product?
There's a lot less. There's no product to get stuck with. So the thing is just not overextend yourself in the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then figure out how to get your people into the mainstream there where they can sell, where they have a chance with all the others. I think that's a pretty, I think nowadays that's kind of what the key is, to get the people that have the product good enough to sell on a national level to get them to do it.
Hmm.
So we think we can help with that. We'll have a lot to learn when we get in, but But I think we'll help figure it out along with everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you guys even go in as far as starting out, as far as establishing the relationships with these stores and, you know, the labels and everything like that?
You just go in, open the doors. My partner had some relationships with some retailers. He had worked for another one stop. So we had some relationships and we just built it up. There were a lot of retailers at that time. And when I got to Houston, we were totally dedicated to service. You know, we ship stuff all over the United States. We would come in, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. We'd work till 7 or 8 at night. If there was any kind of possibility that we could get an order out, depending on what time UPS closed their doors at their hub, we would be taking orders up until then and shipping them all over the country. So we were real aggressive as the one-stop buyers, and until 1990, 91, that's all we did was one-stop, and it was a good business, but the margins are real tight.
Yeah, and so I was reading that UGK was the first project that you guys, is this correct? It was the first guy you distributed?
Uh-huh, pretty much. There were some other ones in there, but Much Posse.
Much Posse, I was reading, because they were supposed to sign a rap lab, but they opted to go with you guys or something like that.
I never knew that. Okay. I just knew they had a big song, and then about 6 months after, they kind of disappeared. That was a good song. And then
wait, they had a song, and they went to you guys. So 6 months they had success, and you never really kind of heard from them again?
They had a song called On Fondren, and it was real hot, and I think the leader of their group got incarcerated.
Okay.
So I've since reconnected with him. He's a great guy. But then UGK, my brother came to me. My brother worked with us, and he said, there's one of our retailers, Big Time Records, wanted to see if we would carry his cassette. And at first I said no. I said, I know what he's going to do. Russell Washington, who's one of the great music guys,
definitely
in the business.
He's definitely.
He's one of the best. But I said, what he'll do is he'll sell us some, then the retailers, he'll sell them to the retail, and then he'll ask us to pay him, and then the retailers will send it all back. That's what the game was that we were afraid of, because as a one stop, as it happened, we couldn't get enough of it. We bought 25, then the next day 25 more, 50. We sold 75,000 in about 2-3 months.
Wow!
And Jive Records called me, and was, of course, they were all over UGK and.
Do you have any recollection of like a young like Pimp C and Bun B? Were they ever involved or anything? Or you more so dealt with Russell on the business end?
I dealt with Russell. I met Bun just once, I think. He had to come in and write down the lyrics of Tell Me Something Good one day. I never met Pimp C. Never met him. Talked to him on the phone several times. But talked to his mom a few times. But never met him. Mm-hmm. But it was a hot record.
Yeah.
And then comes Russell, after UGK went on to Jive, Russell came with DJ Screw.
Yeah, you guys did the 3 in the Morning album.
We did.
Well, distributed it.
Yeah, we did. And I tell you, anybody that was on a Screw tape, a real Screw tape back in those days, had guaranteed sales of probably 10,000 cassettes, LPs, CDs.
They had guaranteed, just off Screw tape appearance.
Guaranteed. If they were on a Screw tape, they would sell 10,000 at least. And Screw, Well, Russell had a, he had a hard time getting that record out. We solicited the DJ Screw, the, what was it, 3 in the morning?
3 in the morning, yeah.
It was 2 volumes when it first came.
Right.
And we had orders for 35,000 of each volume. That was a, that's a pretty incredible independent sales. We had never had anything like that before. Mm-hmm. And 35,000 of each. And then when Russell brought it in, and the all the people downstairs would come up and say, Robert, there's a lot of samples on this. This is all. You got Michael Jackson. You got
On the first volume, because he had to redo it.
On the first 2 volumes.
Okay.
So I brought Russell in, and I said, Russell, you know, I don't think we can put this out. Just too much on it. So he had to go back and redo the whole thing, just 1 volume of the local people. And it sold, you know, I don't know how many we sold, but I'm pretty sure it was over a couple hundred thousand.
Wow.
And in the meantime, we have Fat Pat coming a little bit before Screw came out, but was on the Screw tapes. So and he of course was killed before his record even came out.
Right.
But that was a big hot one.
Yeah. So okay, I don't want to move too fast with the DJ Screw thing. Did you ever have any interactions with DJ Screw? How was your relationship with Screw?
Yeah. We were friends. I didn't know him real well, but Russell brought him in when he could get him to come in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real tragedy when he was gone.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys, ESG, Lil Kiki, those records that kind of came out of that little clique were really, really hot records. Great guys, great rappers.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed working with the guys.
Yeah. So with the
Botany Boys, I have to mention.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And I think somebody said that Courtney C-Note was the first one.
He was the first one to put an album out
on a Screw tape.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that.
To freestyle, he was the first one to freestyle on there. Yeah, he was. Yeah. So okay, so you were talking about Fat Pat. So talk about, because I mean this is D-Rec and this is the Rec Shop label coming into the fold and everything like that.
D-Rec, he was a tough little guy, boy. He really attacked the marketing. He always had good artists coming out. The Fat Pat, we kind of went through a lot there together. When, you know, Fat Pat, when he died, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. But the record still sold just as well. And of course, it had the big hit.
Right.
The big hit on it.
Tops Drop. Yeah.
And there were other groups in there. Trinity Garden Cartel. We sold a lot of their records.
Were you listening to any of this stuff? Or it was just more so just business?
I didn't at first, but then I started listening, and I got to really like it.
Yeah.
Especially the stuff that was on the radio. I was always listening to see if something was going to be on the radio.
Yeah.
That's what I was kind of pop-minded.
Yeah.
So, man.
Okay, so you guys, you know, I was talking to Din Din recently, and he was saying how, you know, just off the word of DJ Screw, he went over and they started doing the Straight Profit deal with you guys.
Yeah. Din was another great little business guy. Had, of course, Zero and
Youngster.
That was a heck of a story. I had in Southwest, Madonna called me about Youngster. She said she wanted Youngster. And
wait. Madonna called to sign him?
Yeah. But he ended up going with Sony.
Right.
She was with Warner Brothers. I had a friend of mine work for Madonna, and he was calling on her behalf, but one day she called.
Wow. Was it more of her being like a fan of the music or watching the numbers and being like, oh, it could be some success here?
Well, maybe both. I don't know what her music tastes were, but
the numbers were there.
It was he was blowing up.
Yeah.
he was blowing up. He could really rap.
Yeah, yeah. So wow.
Freestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, so, wow, okay. So, when you're, man, I'm still tripping that Madonna wanted to sign Youngster. That's wild, man. Talk about Lil Troy, because, I mean, all these are, like, situations that were small, but because of you guys, they were able to turn into these bigger deals.
You know, I think probably things like Wanna Be a Baller.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody could have made that a hit. You know, guys would come to me and say, I'm the one that blew up Wanna Be a Baller. And I just laugh and I say, I'd like to see a radio, if the guys at the box wouldn't play that song, I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Because the public was screaming for it. And that's what you're always trying for. You know, you can, whatever you do to market and promote it, at some point, the public has to demand it. When the public demands it, then you know you have a hit. You know, besides that, all the little stuff that goes on doesn't count much until it gets into the hands of the public. That's my view.
Yeah, yeah. So, were you guys, did you ever feel any type of way about, like, kind of being like, okay, you guys came through us and now you go get these deals? Or were you just like, hey, we're just doing our job. Like, we did what we were supposed to do. Well, now it's kind of on to the next one.
Yeah, you know, we didn't take any kind of cut when the guys got the major deals. We did support them, you know, sometimes. We would help them get their records out. We would help them do their, we would help pay for the graphics and things like that, and the manufacturing, we would help pay for that and then take it out of the back end when the money started coming in, because it was about 90 days to get paid in those days.
I was going
to
ask about that, because you guys were doing, what was it, a 90-day deal on it or something? Like,
well, we paid the artist every 30 days, but you know, some of the big chains, they pay you in 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but then there was something about, like, you guys were doing, was it a 90-day lease before it went into, like, an indie network, like a national indie network or something? I was reading some older article, I think. I may have this kind of mixed up.
I'm not sure what that, no, we got, the whole thing was getting the record out, you know. Not, to me, the important thing was, so that the money didn't drag out too far, was to make sure you got the graphics done and the recording, everything all finished, and put it out. You know, so you're working your pre-release stuff, and then if you have the good timing, the record just comes in. You've already solicited it. You ship it in 90 days. You start getting paid. Some of the times, I don't mean that. Some, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Every 90 days.
Yeah. So I mean, at this time, I mean, you guys also worked with Selena as well, right?
As a one-stop, yeah.
As a one-stop, okay.
One of my guys, recently deceased, was a real good friend of Selena. He went down there. He was our leading, he was our Tejano guy. And when Selena died, we made a deal with EMI because they had a hard time out of their warehouse shipping everything to all the different retailers that wanted it. And of course, they ran out immediately. It was so big at that time. I mean, you know, when Selena died, it was, for us, it was bigger than when Elvis died, when John Lennon died. You know, there was a big, huge demand. But for her, just to give you an example, we sold over 200,000 pieces of Selena in the 2 months after she passed.
Oh, wow.
They would, and so Musicland, who would usually buy it direct, they said, we'll buy it from Southwest. So we get it in, ship it the very same day we got it. And that was the quickest way to get it to the record stores. But that was a terrible thing, and no telling how big she could have been.
Yeah, yeah. And then you guys...
But that was not as a distributor.
Okay.
That was as a one-stop.
Yeah, yeah. So were you guys still being a one-stop as well once you got into distribution?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, one-stop was always, I'd say, two-thirds to 75% of our overall business.
Hmm.
So, we had a, you know, the one-stop business, though, it started to started to die off when Napster came in.
Mm-hmm.
So the retailers just started dropping like flies.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of staying kind of in that realm with Selena and everything. You guys had SBM, which is big for you guys, right?
Oh yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, because I mean, he's another one who went on to from you guys, mm-hmm. you know, go on to get a national deal, a major deal.
Well, there's certain guys, and Carlos is one. I mean, I know we helped them. We helped Dope House. We helped Carlos. I was real good friends with him. He would come in and see me, and I'd go over there and see them. Nobody could have stopped him. He started out giving out cassettes at car shows in the bathrooms.
Yeah.
You know, that's from what I understand. And he was a great marketer, still is. You know, in prison, I don't think any.
He's still successful.
Hispanic rapper sells more than Carlos still.
Oh wow.
He's very successful. And he's a great marketer, a great mind. Really funny. Good guy.
Yeah. Was he one of the people you were more closer to?
Very close to Carlos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any other ones that you kind of got closer relationships with?
Well, really, all of them.
Yeah.
You know, D-Rec, Russell, Washington, Courtney from Botany Boys, D-Red. Really, all of them.
Yeah.
Anybody that was working with us, I was pretty good friends with.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing you mentioned earlier was that about, you know, just the educating part. Talk about a little bit about that, about not just being this place where you go and, you know, deal with your product, but actually learning the business. What were you guys actually having conversations about back then?
About how they're going to do their street teams, any kind of marketing idea that they had, we would, we'd hash it over. You know, how they should organize their plan, you know, how they time it, you know, everything. And all the guys, we were able to, there was no hating going on at Southwest. We were able to help all the guys learn from each other. Really, they didn't necessarily learn from us. They learned from each other. You know, if somebody was doing something, we were going to tell the next guy what they were doing that was working.
It was really like a little family over there.
It's what we did, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody liked that. It was a pretty friendly place. You know, you'd come in, you'd have three or four pretty popular local guys in the warehouse at the same time.
So people would come to just kind of hang out, kind of kick it?
Yeah, well, they couldn't do that, but they were there a lot. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
We didn't just hang around. We were a real busy company.
Yeah, yeah. So talk a little bit about, because, you know, the other thing that I always tie Southwest Wholesale to is Pen and Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if it came through Southwest, for the most part, the graphics were going to be Pen and Pixel graphics, you know.
They did a lot of the big ones. You know, I say, I don't know who invented Bling, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Pen and Pixel.
Yeah.
They were really good. They took advantage of, because it was all the guys, a lot of guys, they weren't that organized. You know, they were great guys and they worked hard, but as far as organizing, Pen and Pixel helped that. And we helped, like Pen and Pixel would do all the graphic work and they wouldn't have to worry about getting paid because we would pay them based on sales.
Yeah.
You know, if something, you know, they would recoup and then we would pay. So we were paying Pen and Pixel. And then we were recouping. We were recouping from what we paid Pen and Pixel. That was the first thing. And then Houston Records and some other manufacturers, the same. We did business with Clyde at Black Cat, God rest his soul, and some of the others.
Clyde Black Cat? Who was that? I'm sorry.
Clyde had Black Cat Productions. He did graphics.
Okay.
Wait.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah. He passed away, right?
He passed away a few months ago.
Yeah.
Mike Frost.
Frost.
There were a lot of good graphics people. A lot of them. But Pen and Pixel was the one we did the most business with.
Yeah.
They were open from about 1991 to 2002, about that. And that's the time we did distribution, and we closed in 2002. Mm-hmm. So Pen and Pixel closed at the same time.
Yeah. So you guys, I mean, we talked a lot about Houston, but I mean, you guys also did you deal with No Limit and Cash Money as well or no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, because I mean, they went on to be monsters, you know?
Yeah. They're good friends of mine. And they were real aggressive. They couldn't break out of the New Orleans market. You know, they were in business, I don't know how long, 8 or 9 years, I think. They were using Gonzalez and maybe some local distributors in New Orleans. But then when they came to us, they dropped everybody else. We sold to everybody else. We were the exclusive distributor. And they started showing up on our charts, like right at the top of our charts, and they stayed there. And so the people in our market started buying it. And so they broke. Houston was the second market they broke, and then they were going to Universal after that almost immediately. I guess we had about a year and a half, 2 year run with Cash Money.
Oh, wow. And did you guys do No Limit as well or no?
We did No Limit a little bit, but after their heyday.
Okay.
Master P.
After the Priority deal, they came.
Right. He used to come by. He'd bring his son by the warehouse to see us. He was we had a really good relationship with him.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite out of all the people, or some of your favorites?
All of them.
Yeah.
I like all of them. I think the number one rap song that ever came out of Houston was Minds Playing Tricks on Me, and we didn't do that one. You know, that was, we did it as a one-stop a lot, but you know, that was another one. As soon as you heard it, you knew. I was on the Bolivar Ferry when I heard that song the first time, and I said, wow. And then before I got off the ferry, it's about a 30-minute ferry ride, they had played it again.
Oh, man.
And it was a great song.
Yeah. So, I mean, now talk about, just kind of towards the end, because you said it ended in 2002. But talk about just, you know, you said Napster. We mentioned Napster. You know what I mean? And the role in that play.
Napster, a lot of companies went bankrupt.
Yeah. Blockbuster Music and all that shit.
Blockbuster owed us $1 million.
Oh, wow.
And went bankrupt. So, you know, that was one thing. 9/11. There's a lot of different things that went into it. It was a kind of a perfect storm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but it turned around, because I think I've had somebody on here, and they were saying, like, it was like a quick thing, like you guys kind of shut down. It was kind of like an immediate shutdown, like it wasn't really like a gradual.
It was, fairly immediate.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I don't like to talk about that too much.
Understandable. So, I mean, moving forward, man, I mean, talk about what you've learned from this, you know, from just over time, you know what I mean? How's that going to be applied to what you're doing now with Southwest Wholesale? Because well, like I said, I think you guys, you know.
It's all about the, you know, nowadays it's all about marketing and promotion. And, you know, you've got to identify your market. You've got to attack your market. You know, you've got to get on all those playlists that you can. You've got to figure out a way to get to the curators. And radio is still important, but now it's about 50-50, I think. I've seen some pretty heated arguments about what's more important nowadays if you're to break a record. Is it what you do on the internet and the playlists and all that stuff, or is it airplay? And I think it comes out somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think that the internet really kind of help kind of even that playing field, where you just don't have to go through radio just to find, you know,
yeah,
mainstream success.
It's hard for guys to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. You know, it's hard to contact all those curators. It's hard to find out who they are. And, you know, we're trying to make direct relationships with people like Pandora and Spotify, have somebody that we can go to for our people. just like back in the old days with the radio. You know, I was just like we were paying for the graphics, we were paying for manufacturing, and then we would recoup. If we had a record that we were confident in the we were working with the guys, we would also pay for the radio ads and recoup. So, and it turns out we're doing 4 or 5 radio ads a week for the box. And it kind of put a little bit more pressure, not real pressure, we didn't apply any pressure, but it put some pressure on them to play some of the local music.
I'm glad you said this, because I always talk about how in that era, you know, we were heard on the radio, and I always felt like Southwest Wholesale may have been connected to that.
Well, that's what we did to be a part of it. You know, we were running all the radio spots through the box and Magic and all the other radio stations. We were running the ads. And so it's easy for us to expect, you know, in this market, when you put everything together, all the ads we were running, it equaled what the majors were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just logical that they're going to play some of our stuff. And some of it just could, you know, you couldn't hold it back. Southside, Wanna Be a Baller.
25 you know, Lighters.
25 Lighters, Dory.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... it was a great one. I guess he also did a lot of production for UGK when they came out.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Okay. Well, this is really really dope, man. Is there anything else before we get out of here, man?
No, I just like to say, you know, how much I enjoyed working with all the guys. That was you know, Some of them didn't have a lot of education, but they were just as smart as anybody. They knew what to do, and so we were all kind of the whole market was kind of a big team. We had a real good team atmosphere. I'm sure there was some hating going on out there on the streets, but to me, once it came into Southwest, you know, it was the whole Houston market was a big team. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to get that feeling again.
Yeah, yeah. So talk, I mean, how are you guys going to go about working with the artist in this next run?
Well, we'll just, you know, put it through the digital channels. We'll, you know, put it through, you know, Spotify, Apple, Pandora. We'll put it all through there and work. We have a real good team. And we're going to work on the help the guys, mainly educate them. We're not, at Southwest, we took everything that met the criteria to be put out in the market. We took everything. We didn't turn anything down. And we had a kind of a policy that if you wanted to come in and discuss something, you could, but you might have to wait a long time. Because, you know, I stayed till 7 or 8 just about every day. And we were talking to guys all day long.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah. So and more so, I guess I was saying, like, how are you guys going to go about the process of getting involved with Southwest Wholesale in the digital era? Are you guys,
well,
do you have people,
yeah,
that you're looking
just,
at
just
or is
to
it kind
be
of
clear
a,
it's not Southwest Wholesale.
Okay.
It's a brand new company, Southwest.
Okay.
Digital.
Southwest Digital.
I don't know, we're just going to do like Southwest did, you know, start where we are and build from there. And I don't know how it'll go, but we're gonna do our best. And I hope to get to work with some of the guys again.
Yeah. Have you guys already started reaching out to some artists and getting, uh-huh, you know, some stuff together? Nice.
Right.
So when's going to be the official launch? Are you already kind of in that space right now?
Well, we've kind of had a soft launch. We're hoping to put out some records next month.
Anything you can tell us about?
Glasses Malone.
Nice.
We're putting out an album for him. We're putting out a few songs for Mike Jones, who his his songs were just as big as any of the ones we ever put out.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about that. I mean, the Swisher House and...
Swisher House was great. Michael, of course, Mad Hatter had the
Paid
Paul
in full.
Wall and Chameleonaire.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of... there were a lot of good stuff. Little O.
Yeah.
Like I say, some of my favorites were the Trinity Garden Cartel guys, because they were with us right when we started, and we learned a lot. We learned a lot together. I'm sure I'm forgetting some really good ones.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see how it goes this time. There'll be some of the old guys, I'm sure, will come. But you know, there's all distribution. After we left the game, there's some other distribution companies popped up.
Yeah, So South, and you know.
Yeah, we're not trying to hurt anybody's business. You know, if somebody wants to come with us, so be it. I'd also mention that we did real well. Besides the Tejano market, we did real well in the gospel market. We had Kerry Douglas and Worldwide Gospel. He's Black Smoke Records, and they're one of the probably the top independent gospel label in the United States. That's my, I think. Kerry had three of the top five songs on the Billboard chart just about a month ago. He's a really aggressive, has all his family working with him, and he does very well.
Yeah, yeah. So for any artist who may be listening to this, any up and coming artist who may be saying, "Man, I would love to work with Southwest Digital," what would you
just come
suggest
on,
for them?
Come on down, give us a call. I don't know the phone number, but it's the website is swdd.io, and I'm sure you'll be hearing a little bit about us as we come up.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, that's cool, man. Well, listen, man, it's been an honor to sit down and talk, man. Like I said, I always talk about Southwest Wholesale, and Pen and Pixel. I mean, all the things you guys, you know, did in the first run, man. I'm looking forward to this next one, man.
I miss not having the Pen and Pixel guys with us this time.
Are they still around?
I've heard that Sean, I don't think he lives anywhere near here, but I think he still does some graphics for some of the guys. Aaron... He's with what's the guy's name? Tony Roberts, the positive thinking
guy.
Yeah. Aaron's one of the top people with him. So, you know, Aaron and his partner Cliff, they started out with Rap-A-Lot.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that, but they were with him when they did Minds Playing Tricks on Me.
Cliff, wait, he was a partner, right?
He was.
Was he initially a partner?
He and Aaron went to Cornell University together.
Okay.
And I think Cliff did promotion. I mean, did production.
Production.
Yeah, I think that's what he did. Aaron was like the general, kind of a general manager type at that time.
Yeah.
I met Aaron in Memphis at a Selecta Hits convention.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, you guys, at that time, I mean, you guys were kind of one of the leading distributors. You had the Selecto Hits, you had Gonzalez. Would you say you guys were probably the number one?
In the Southern United States, we were big, and we did real well in the Southern United States as a one-stop and a distributor.
Yeah. Who would you say off the top of your head probably sold the most from you guys?
For us?
Yeah.
Well, we had Screw, Fat Pat, Kiki with Jam Down Records. We also had a group out of Chicago called the Legit Ballers, which had Twista. It was Twista and the Legit Ballers, and we sold a few hundred thousand of that one, hundred something thousand of their second one.
So these are, I mean, you're talking about 100,000, and these are, what is this, $8 a CD? Well, let's talk about the business side of that, because we didn't talk about that.
We would pay about $8. I really don't remember exactly, but I think we paid about $8. We sold them for about, you know, 10. So,
Wow.
But some of them were really moving. It was a South Park Mexican. Boy, we sold a lot of his. He had more than one record going. Cash Money, they had, you know, they would put out a record about every 2 or 3 months. They would put out a new one, and every one would sell better than the last. I mean, it was some serious momentum. And once they got with Universal, they would put out one single off of each of their albums, and then they would come with another album. And Universal, when Back That Thing Up, that to me, that's what put them over the top. That was the fourth or fifth single off that album. You know, they might not ever got to us if they were worked so fast on the production side, they might not ever got to Back That Thing Up if they were with us. So.
Yeah.
So there's it was a lot of fun. It was real exciting. There's nothing more exciting than a hot independent record.
Hmm.
I tell the guys, you know, they would be real hot, and then they would sign with a major, and then they'd come in and they say, "Man, people aren't that interested anymore." I said, "That's right, because when you were independent, everybody wanted you.
Yeah,
they were all knocking on your door, and once you went with somebody, they weren't all knocking on your door anymore." But not that you don't do very, very well that way. And not that it, you know, I couldn't say Cash Money. They made every decision they made was great. Carlos, same way. Some of them got bad deals. But most of them did okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything that you would do different in the first run?
I hate to look back. You know, I'm pretty happy with the way the whole thing went. I don't have any regrets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we went out of business. Some people didn't get paid. You know, I lost everything I had.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that's the way it goes. We're going to try to do it again here, and
You lost everything you had. Are you talking about from the business standpoint, or are you saying personally, like it trickled down all the way down?
It trickled down personally. Yeah, so I lost everything. I had to start over again. I got into restaurants after Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good run there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we sold our restaurants in October of 2016, and I decided, you know, I was so bored with retirement. You know, I don't have hobbies or anything like that. I just like to work, and so that's why we're giving it another go.
Yeah. Same business partner, everything.
No.
Okay.
We have a little group. Names John Patillo, Federico Marquez. Ghetto Garland Cyrus is with us. Kerry Douglas helps us with the gospel stuff. You know, we have a experienced, very savvy team. So we'll see how things go.
Yeah,
And how
long have you guys been running? You said you had a short, a soft opening. How long have you guys been?
Just a few months.
Few months. Okay, so it's very early. Very early.
It's early.
Yeah. No, that's exciting, man. I mean, you got to be excited about it just to see what it can turn into.
Yeah. Well, we just have to see how it goes. It's a different world out there now. So we'll see how we can navigate it.
Yeah.
I think we'll do okay.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you've had your eye on that you're like, man, I kind of would love to kind of work with them on this? Or?
You know, I miss the old guys that, you know, I haven't kept up totally with what's new.
Yeah.
So.
And there's a void to be filled there. I mean, those guys are still making music. So, I mean, that's perfect for you guys to come back.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of them were with other distributors. And that's, like I say, I'm not trying to hurt any other distributors. We're just trying to do our thing.
Yeah.
And see, and if somebody comes with us, I don't want it to be because they feel obliged. I want them to feel that this is the best thing for me. That's how we work.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool, man. That's cool. I'm, like I said, I'm looking forward to it, man. I've praised you guys, you know, past works, man, a million times on here, man.
Well, here's hoping.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, like I said, we have Robert Gilliman, man. This has been great. It's been an honor. Thank you so much for joining me for this conversation, man. It's the Donnie Houston Podcast. We're out.